Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Strangest Stories, Volume 3. Story number 1. I was a freshman in high school in my hometown of La Crosse, Wisconsin. I was sleeping over at my friend Tom's house. We were watching a movie in his living room when he suddenly got a phone call. I watched as he listened to what was being said on the other line. I watched as emotion poured over his face as he threw the phone across the room. After moments of crying, he told me that a boy at my school had committed suicide. Now, I knew this boy only through seeing him in the halls. My friend Tom and I didn't go to the same high school, but Tom had gone to middle school with this boy. Apparently, Tom bullied him during those years. He wasn't proud of it, and to be honest, I was pretty surprised because he was a great guy. He had utter remorse. We decided to sneak out and go for a walk. The year was roughly 1990, maybe 1991. We were freshmen in high school. Now, sneaking out was nothing new. We always did it. At the same time, we weren't into drugs, alcohol, or partying. We just liked the freedom of walking the streets at night. The discussions were always great. Normally, we'd go walk through the big cemetery that was near my house. It was behind the train tracks that still run through La Crosse to this day. We loved the danger of the cemetery, the scares. We were kids. It was a rite of passage. As we walked along the train tracks leading to the cemetery, we stopped. To this day, I can't explain why. We had walked into that cemetery dozens of times, and on scarier nights. For whatever reason, we didn't want to go in there. I don't know if the thought of death on our minds due to my classmate's suicide was a factor, perhaps. Regardless, without really saying anything to each other, we stopped, turned around, and decided to head down a nearby street. Now, in retrospect, I do have to say that throughout this walk, themes seemed off. There wasn't a car in sight. This was suburbia. Even walking through the town's main street was odd because there just weren't any cars. Odd. It was roughly after midnight. It was a weekend night. Where was everybody? Perhaps just a strange coincidence? Lastly, there was something in the air. Both Tom and I felt it. We even brought it up. It feels weird tonight. The air, the lights. So we decided to walk down a dead-end street. At the end of the street was a ditch with a simple up-down and up trail that led to the street that I lived on. Simple enough. Keep in mind, as I get into this horrifying part of the story, that we were in the suburbs. These weren't old creepy houses with strange individuals, and the trees were small. It wasn't a brand new development, but it wasn't that old either. So as Tom and I are walking down the street, we're looking down to the road beneath our feet as we talk. I don't remember the exact conversation at this particular moment. Perhaps we were talking about the tragedy of that night, but it could just have easily been about Star Wars or Akira. As we approached the dead end, which was a few houses away, Tom and I suddenly stopped. We did so at the same time without saying one word to each other. Our heads slowly turned towards each other, both sensing something. The hair on our arms and backs of our necks standing high. Then our gaze slowly moved forward in unison, slightly to the right. That's when we saw it. About two houses away, in a virtually barren front yard of a suburban home, beside some bushes was a dark figure. It was someone or something in dark robes. No face, no features at all, just the robe. Now, this figure didn't acknowledge us. Not yet. It instead walked or moved in a certain way. I can't articulate it correctly, as if it was walking in circles slowly, without really walking. It held something that was blowing in the wind. And yes, the wind picked up a little bit as well. Another odd element was the light that illuminated it somewhat. There was a street light a few houses up, but it wasn't strong enough to illuminate this figure as it was. Tom and I were frozen. In fact, I'm almost frozen as I talk about this now. It's been a while since I have thought about this night. So there we stood, frozen in fear, staring at this dark figure moving, yet doing so without moving. And it was holding something. Or perhaps what was blowing in the wind was more of its robe. I'm not sure. We stared at this thing for I don't know how long until it stopped and suddenly looked up at us, as if finally alarmed by our presence. That was enough for us. We ran away as fast as we could. We cut through a side street that was to lead us to a parallel street towards my neighborhood. This street led to a slight hill. As we rounded the corner and started running up the hill in a panic, we stopped. Because on top of that hill, we saw another dark figure with its arms raised. We turned around and ran away in the direction of Tom's house, which at this distance was at least 5 miles away. We ran. Time stood still. The next thing I remember, we were lying in the middle of a courtyard of some other neighborhood that we'd never been in, gasping for breath. We sat up. Without saying a word, we walked in silence back to his house. The air felt normal again, although we felt like we were in a haze of sorts, albeit out of danger. We fell asleep at his house. I woke up that morning and went home. A few days later, I rode my bike to the location. Perhaps it was shadow play, perhaps it was a certain tree or bush, or maybe a for sale sign or something that made it look like there was something else there. Nothing. It was an open yard. Tom and I didn't speak of that night for a long time. Years later, when I brought it up, he replied, "Yeah, what the hell was that?" As if no time had passed. What was it? I have no idea. We hadn't taken any drugs. We hadn't been drinking any alcohol. I often wonder if it could have been a haunting, a specter, a ghost, etc. Maybe it was an alien abduction or sighting. We saw no craft, but there was that unexplained light. Or maybe it was some other kids messing with us. But how would they have known we were coming? How could they be so prepared? I just don't know. That was roughly 24 years ago, give or take. And yes, this is a true story. Sadly, my best friend Tom passed suddenly a few months ago. I thought of this night during his funeral. I thought of returning to that site. I thought of the odd coincidence of unexpected and surprising death, just like my classmate that night. Is there a connection? Were we seeing some future fate for one of us, which sadly fell upon my best friend Tom? With this awesome dual hallucination in my mind? No way. But still, it haunts me at times. Story number 2. One night, when I was 10, I was asleep in bed and was woken up by my bedroom door opening, then someone sitting on my bed. I felt the graze on my leg and the bed sink as they sat. Thinking it was my mom having something to tell me, I opened my eyes only to see a pale, eyeless, just black empty sockets boy who seemed to be my age, sitting at the foot of my bed with his legs crossed, staring at me. Or facing my direction, since he had no eyes. He then reached his hand toward me, and he was holding what looked like a little black box. I was freaked out, but as I reached to grab it, he hesitantly pulled back. I reached out further for it, and he said, "Give it." As I did so, I blinked, and by the time I opened my eyes, he was gone. The spot of the bed where he was sitting lifted back into place, but the imprint of someone sitting there was still present. I told my mom in the morning, and she was slightly freaked, but assured me I was just dreaming. Fast forward 5 years. I had my girlfriend over to do homework. After homework, she took a nap while she waited for her parents to pick her up. When they arrived, I tried waking her to let her know. I nudged her, and she opened her eyes so suddenly, already looking in the direction of the corner of the room where the wall meets the ceiling. Lifted her finger and pointed, and as fast as she woke, she fell asleep again. I attempted to wake her again. She came to full consciousness, and I asked her what the hell was that about, and explained what she just did. She said, "Oh, I thought I was dreaming, but up on the wall, I saw a little boy with no eyes, just there. in a Spider-Man pose staring at me. That's when I freaked out and told her the story for the first time of when I saw what I guess was the same kid. Fast forward another 5 years. Still with the same girlfriend, and by this time we had a 2-year-old daughter. We were living in my old bedroom at my parents' house. My daughter would wake up at the same time every night and start talking. For a while we thought it was a normal baby thing, until I noticed it was almost the same conversation every night. I playfully asked her one night who she was talking to, and she responded, "A little boy. He talks to me. He's nice. He's lost and looking for his mommy." I told my mom what happened the next morning, and before I got to tell her what I thought, she said, "I remember when that happened to you, then your girlfriend. I have no idea what that is." By then, neither my girlfriend or I have seen little boy after our first encounter, but my daughter continued her nightly conversations until we got our own place later that year. Story number 3. When I was a child, I was scared of the dark. I swore to my mother I heard voices in it. They were not evil, but they were not familiar, and so they scared me. It was not uncommon in the middle of the night for me to wake up and hear whispers, as I would call them when asking my mom. She figured they were just bumps in the night and typical kid's nightmare material. I tried often to explain to her that it was more than that, that they sounded different from one another the way people's voices do. On some nights, I would get so scared from these whispers that I would sleep in my mom's bed with her. It was an added bonus that the bathroom was directly outside of her bedroom door from my late night tinkles. I would add at this point that when walking out into the hall to go to the bathroom, you look directly down the stairs that would lead you into my living room on the first floor, as my mom's bedroom was on the second floor. On one such night around Christmas, I awoke and felt the need to relieve myself. I walked out from the door and distinctly heard the phrase, "Look," and to my astonishment, a red light, almost like a spotlight, was cast upon the wall at the very bottom of the stairs. The light had no other source. It was by itself, and I was transfixed by it. Being a little kid, and it only being a few days from Christmas, I knew what this light was. It was Santa. How else could he get into my house to know I was being a good boy? I was so excited, I began walking down the stairs to greet him, picking up my pace after the second step as I began to creep off the wall and fade into the darkness in my living room. That's when I heard him. A very strong, masculine voice. Different from the first, not at all like my father's. Not to say he wasn't masculine, he was just distinctly different. It said, "Stop. Right now. Go back up those stairs." I listened, turned around, and what happened next, I'm not sure. I would believe if someone had told me the same story. After reaching the top of the stairs, I heard a very loud crash that sent me running back to my mother's bed, where I jumped straight under the covers and stayed there the whole night. When we awoke the next morning, the poinsettia lights, which are the little Christmas flower lights that glowed red, my mother had put on the railing down the stairs, were pulled straight down to the bottom of the stairs, some broken from what seemed like a forceful tear, lying in a single pile. The dry sink in my living room had fallen from the wall. My mother could not explain it. My father was worried. We had been the victims of a home invasion. My sister was crying. There was nothing missing. Nobody had broken in. There did not seem to be any reason this had happened. And then I saw it. And I kept quiet about it because I was so afraid that I could not force words out of my mouth. There, on the edge of the wooden dry sink, which had been facing up with 3 indentations, where the finish on the wood had been worn, almost as if in a forceful grip, something down there had grabbed it and threw it down. That was what the bang was. I was mortified. After that day, I never heard a single voice again. I do not like to imagine what was waiting downstairs for me that night. Next story. In 7th grade, my friends and I went over to Mary's house intent on playing with her mom's Ouija board that night. None of us had played with one before. Mary's mom was an extremely spiritual person who believed in energies, witchcraft, stuff like that. Before we used the board, Mary warned us that her mom would be really pissed if she found out that we were playing with it, because Ouija boards can attract bad spirits into the home. With full knowledge of this, we decided to proceed anyway. This Ouija board was not like the average Ouija board you have ever seen. Along with the usual characteristics, the alphabet yes, no, goodbye, there was an entire array of symbols and signs that were all arranged in a circle. This was some seriously intricate stuff. We started just goofing around and communicating with random spirits here and there, until we finally met one that had us in tears the entire sleepless night. First we asked the spirit if it was a man or a woman, to which he replied, man. Then we asked how he was killed. Murder. That really freaked us out, but only a little bit. More than anything, we were excited. All of a sudden, before we even asked another question, the glass goes to the eyeball symbol, then spelled out I-N, and goes to the water symbol. We didn't have a clue what that meant. It wasn't too scary until the spirit spelled out S-H-O-W-E-E-R, shower. And my best friend realized that the spirit was trying to get us to look into the shower. We froze. I've never been so scared in my entire life, especially sitting directly in front of the bathroom with the shower curtain all the way closed, faced in my direction. We all screamed and promised on our friendships that we had not moved it ourselves. A very important promise. I felt like I was being watched, and my friends thought so too. It was only four of us, and I believe with all my heart that none of them had moved it because we were all too nervous to do anything. I'll never use a Ouija board again because of how crazy and intense that night was. I understand that people say Ouija boards are controlled by your subconscious, but I just don't believe it. I know I felt something in that room with us, and I know it was very dangerous. Next story. When my wife and I bought our first house, an old Victorian style built in the 50s, almost every night we heard what sounded like kids' footsteps running down the upstairs hallway and other random sounds. My wife mentioned it to one of the neighbors, and they said it was probably just peacocks on the roof. The house backed up to a conservation area where wild peacocks lived, and they would occasionally get up on the rooftops. The answer made sense, so we basically got used to it and eventually ignored it. Less than a year later, our son was born. And when he was one, he would bounce all of his toys on top of other toys and made them spin. Literally, found the center of balance of various toys and would walk in a circle around the room, giving each a gentle touch to keep it rotating. It was the weirdest and coolest thing I had ever seen. When he was two or three, we would hear him talking in his room at night, and one night I asked who he was talking to. He said, Tracy. I asked, who is Tracy? And he says, the girl who lives in the wall. She usually nice, but sometimes she scares me. He described a girl with brown hair and a yellow dress who would play with him sometimes and occasionally wake him up at night. But he didn't seem bothered by any of it, just startled sometimes. He would talk about her once in a while, but it wasn't a common occurrence. A couple of years later, we had added on to the house and moved the master bedroom downstairs, switching the kids' rooms around. Our youngest was now in his old room and about ready to transition from crib to toddler bed. She had always been a sound sleeper, but she cried almost every night in that room. Her first night in the toddler bed, we heard a loud thud followed by screaming and rushed into the room thinking she had fallen out of bed. She was on the other side of the room. Got her to calm down and back to bed, and it happened again the next night. So we ended up switching the kids' room back, and they were fine. We looked up the history of the house, but didn't find anything about any missing little girls or anyone with the name Tracy that had lived there. Eventually, our son stopped talking about her, and a few years later, I ended up taking a job with another company, and we moved. The house was empty for a few months after we moved, and the neighbor across the street called my wife one day and said about a week after we left, she thought she saw our daughter looking out the window, so she waved to her, and then she remembered we didn't live there anymore. Next story. I had a call to a residence for a mental evaluation or a 5150. Anyway, I get there and speak to a 50-something-year-old woman who states Her 20-something-year-old son is under the influence of an unknown drug and kept repeating that he can't go into his bedroom because there was an old man hanging in his room. She stated she was too scared to go in his room and investigate it for herself because he constantly brings over friends that are drug addicts and is unsure if his claims were true or not. I then went to speak to the son, who was clearly under the influence of a stimulant. He went on to tell me that he was told by a spirit not to enter the room because her father, dressed in his military class of uniform, was hanging in his bedroom. I checked the room out, and of course there was nobody hanging in the room. As I'm in the middle of explaining to the mother that there was nobody in the bedroom, a veteran officer arrived on the scene to assist me. He pulled me aside and stated earlier in his career he responded to this residence in that same bedroom he had to investigate a suicide by hanging of an older male subject. He didn't remember all the details, so I took it up in our report management system and my patrol car, and sure enough, the officer was correct. The subject to die was a World War II veteran and had dressed in his military uniform and hung himself. In my mind, I always thought that when they purchased the home, possibly this incident was disclosed to them. However, I thought the mother would have mentioned it to me if it had been disclosed to her. It was genuinely concerned about her son and the allegations. Next story. This one my dad told me. When he and his brother were younger, they took a job to clean out some old lady's attic. The lady lived in a regular one-story house with a normal attic space, the kind where you can't stand up fully. You have to stoop down and crawl everywhere. She had been hearing animals moving around and wanted some of her stuff pulled out of there before it got chewed up. For some reason, the attic only had one crawl space and it was in the living room off to one side. So they pulled up a folding ladder, put it underneath, and my uncle climbed up and pushed the door up. He popped his head through, and the attic, dimensions of space be damned, was an exact replica of the living room underneath it, complete with lighting and doorways leading to God knows where. My dad was standing underneath looking up, and he could tell something wasn't right by the light and the way the roof looked too far up, like getting vertigo. My uncle closed the door, apologized to the lady, and they both took off. My dad said that his brother wouldn't talk to him until they were about a mile away. He just saw that look on his face, and when his brother said, "We've gotta go," he just didn't argue. Next story. My cousin and his family, which were his wife and infant son, lived in their house for about 5 years. His wife left home to drop the baby off at a daycare before working, but realized she had left her phone at home. Entering the house, she turned a corner to the hallway and nearly ran into the drop-down attic ladder, which was fully extended. They never used the attic as it was filled with loose insulation, and my cousin had left for work hours earlier. She quietly left the house, drove around the corner, and called the police. When the police arrived, they investigated and found a short-range transmitter connected to several cameras hidden throughout their home. The light fixture in the shower, the ceiling fan above their bed, even a pinhole in the nursery were sending videos to a nearby location. Their neighbor, a few houses away, had been given a key by the prior owners and installed surveillance equipment once he knew their schedule. My cousin's wife walked in on him updating his equipment, but he forgot something at his house and left to get it when she walked in. He had been watching them for years. Next story. My grandpa named Darrell worked night shifts, so my grandma, named Dora, was home alone most nights. Her sister-in-law, Rose, would randomly come over to keep her company. Dora decided to go to bed early one night. Rose came over that night to see how she was doing. She went to Dora's bedroom after calling for her with a reply of, "I'm in bed, just come in." Upon entering the room, Rose started acting weird and telling her she really wants her to get up and come help her with something in the kitchen. Dora was ready to go to sleep and was already in bed and really didn't want to. Rose was really adamant for her to come and help her, telling her it was urgent. After a while, Dora eventually got up and followed Rose to the kitchen. Upon entering, Rose whispered in a panic with tears in her eyes, "There's a man under your bed with a knife." Dora, of course, didn't believe at first, but seeing the panic in Rose's eyes, she could not believe her. They proceeded to call the cops and left to the neighbor's house. The cops came and found the man hiding in the closet with a butcher knife. And that is the story of how my grandmother was almost murdered and why I still to this day, as a 30-year-old man, check under the bed. Next story. This happened to a friend of mine and was verified by her sister and girlfriend. The three of them were camping in an area in southern Utah, and it was during the fall, early winter, so it got dark very early, around 5. When it started getting dark, the three of them built a fire and sat around it just talking and eating normal stuff. Everything was fine for a while, but they started to hear this weird chirping noise. She described it to me as a kookaburra call slowed down. They got kind of freaked out at this point because it didn't sound like any regular animal. They also kept noticing rustling movement out of the corner of their eyes, but could never see what was making it. After a while, they went to bed and everything was fine until my friend was woken up in the middle of the night to see what looked like hands pressed up against the outside of her tent. And she heard a weird, wet breathing sound like when someone has a stuffy throat and kind of wheezes while breathing. She said she was so scared she couldn't talk, was able to wake up her sister. They stayed quiet and eventually the handprints kind of just faded away. In the morning, they wanted to get the hell out of there, so they started packing up their stuff at sunrise. My friend looked around where the handprints had been and saw a trail of long, skinny footprints leading up to their campsite, but not away from it. Her and her sister aren't the kind to BS around, so I believe that this really happened. To this day, she's convinced that it was a skinwalker. Next story. Back in the 70s, my grandfather dropped my grandmother, mom, and her two sisters off to do some shopping on his way to work. Since he wasn't able to pick them up, they hitchhiked home. My mom, at the time, was only about 10 or 11. Middle sister would have been about 7 or 8, and the youngest was about a year older. They got picked up by a guy in a pickup truck who had them all sit in the back row with one of them holding the baby. My grandmother was giving directions to their home from the highway, but the guy ignored her and went by their exit, claiming he had to make a stop first. Didn't really say much to them during the drive. My mom remembered my grandmother being very quiet and very nervous. Eventually, they came up to a farm. The driver told them to wait in the car and went inside the house. While he was gone, they just sat there terrified. They were in the middle of nowhere, and they knew they couldn't make it out on foot. A few minutes later, the driver came out with a second guy who looked into the truck and saw my mom's youngest sister. He started flipping out, screaming at the driver that he shouldn't have brought the baby back. They're going to do anything with her and some other things I can't remember, and ended up telling him to get them away from the farm. The driver got back into the truck, apologized, and they got back on the highway and drove again in silence. My grandmother, normally a very smart woman, had him drive directly to their house, although I suspect her reasoning was that she'd already given him the address before anything seemed off. They lived at that house for several years and luckily never saw either of them a second time. Next story. So there's this old bridge in my town that's supposedly haunted by a young girl who drowned in the river beneath it. Apparently, if it came at the right time, you could hear her scream. When me and my buddies were in high school, we had nothing better to do than go ghost hunting. Being from a town of 6,000 people in good old southern Illinois, half of that being prison inmates and mental health patients, you have to get a bit creative to have any sort of fun. Anyway, we got to this bridge at about 3 a.m., and we sat there for a while, nothing. About 20 minutes go by, and we were all skeptical. Everyone's joking about how dumb this was or trying to creep each other out. All of a sudden, screaming. The most blood-curdling, high-pitched screaming you've ever heard. It wasn't just one scream either. It never stopped. It kept going, even as we were driving away in our cars. But that's not even the worst part. Me and one of my buddies hightailed it back to the car as soon as we heard the initial scream, because you had to walk a bit downhill to get underneath the bridge. Halfway back, we both go from sprinting to a dead stop at the exact same moment. I never asked him what he saw, because I saw it for myself. It was a girl running on all fours into the woods. I don't talk about this much because it gives me chills just thinking about it, and nobody ever takes me seriously. last story. Okay, this is my go-to scary story that happened to me. When I was about 10 or 11 years old, I stayed up sort of late. When I got to bed, I was still feeling restless. I pulled all of my blankets around me and tucked myself against the wall. My twin bed was flush with the wall. I was in bed awake for probably an hour when I started hearing a rather unsettling noise. Muffled crying. I focused on it, hoping it was my imagination or I was asleep. After a few minutes, I needed to see what it was. I turned around in bed to see a woman in a dress standing at the far side of my room, crying into her hands. Her hair was matted and her clothes tattered. She was about 7 or 8 feet tall, crammed under the ceiling. After a few seconds, she looked up at me and screamed, but it sounded like it was coming from far away. She made eye contact with me, turned around, and walked through the wall. Needless to say, I stayed awake that entire night.